Welcome to Let's Get Writing. I'm your host, Katherine Taylor. Thanks for joining me as we explore the stories behind the stories and meet the authors and learn more about the books they write. And don't forget to subscribe and comment on my new YouTube channel at Katherine Taylor TV. I certainly appreciate your love and support. Now, my guest today is the author of From Showing Off to Showing Up, An Imposter's Journey from Perfect to Present. She is a dynamic communicator whose career includes TV and podcast hosting, specifically the host of the Canadian Love Map. And I listened to that. I think all of you out there would enjoy it so much. And also the Soul Booth podcast. And for 15 years, she was host of CTV Atlantic's Well Loved Live at 5. She's also an amateur poet and a lover of stories. And there's so much more I could say, but I'm going to let her do that. Please help me in welcoming Nancy Regan to the show. Hi, Nancy.
Yes.
How are you?
And I'm up.
Hello.
You're up.
Hello.
You are up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Katherine. It's so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And I'm very excited having read your book and have it right here. I'm just going to show it in the stream so that everyone can see it, From Showing Off to Showing Up. And we're going to delve between the pages of that and between your ears as well to find out everything that went into this project. But before we do, we host this show here in Grand Falls, Windsor, Newfoundland and Labrador, Canada. Please let us know where you're watching from. And I always like to find out if my guests have a connection with Newfoundland, and I believe you do.
Oh, I do. In fact, I like to think I have deep roots in Newfoundland, and I feel them. I think I go through the world feeling those roots. My grandmother, Rose Green, was born in Newfoundland, and she was born in a place called Cape Broil. She was raised there. And eventually moved to Belle Island. And so it's been such a pleasure. I do have some second cousins who live on the Rock, and I've always felt a beautiful connection. Some of my favorite memories from being younger, which is, you know, a lot of my life now when I was younger, some of those favorite memories are visiting in the summertime and going to Cape Royal in particular.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so many beautiful places here. We're so glad you have a connection. And come back soon. But we're going to bring you to Newfoundlanders and the world today. I want to delve into this. I really enjoyed reading your book. And I say enjoyed, but it caused me to do a lot of personal reflection. It took me much longer to read it. I would go to a partner and go, oh, I have to listen to that song, or I have to think about this poem, or I have to think about myself. And so it did take much longer, but it's, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go back and continue to read it again and really take the time I want to take with it. Yeah, a very beautiful book. But I think when you wrote this book, it brought out a side of you that a lot of people had not expected, because they saw you in the media, they saw you as a confident woman in a very high stress job, and you said that that was really not you.
Well, you know, it was part of me, but it certainly wasn't all of me, and I was studiously hiding the part that I didn't want them to see, and those were actually the parts that I felt were inadequate and not worthy of being seen. I felt for a long time like I was wearing a mask and playing the part of a television host who was very confident and had it all together. And I don't think that's so different than many of us in our regular lives. You know, we tend to wear a mask that communicates to the world, everything's good, I've got it all together, even when we are close to falling apart. And there was a time early in my career that I was close to falling apart, even though I was on air projecting this air of confidence to 350,000 people every day. there was this nattering little voice in my head that just was constant, that said things like, oh, I can't believe you said that. Oh, you don't even belong here. You don't deserve this job. And a big part of my effort on air was to try to ignore that while carrying on and being the, you know, compelling host of the show. And what that meant was employing my acting skills. I have to say that I'm a better actor than anyone ever knew.
And someone said that to you in the book. I can't recall his name, but in a conversation you had with someone, they said, you know, you're a very good actor. They called it.
It was a director, actually. I've always done a little bit of acting on the side, and it was a director who was shooting a film starring William H. Macy. And William H. Macy and I, Bill, as everyone on the crew called him, had a scene together, and it was really fortunate for me, because there were delays that day. And so we ended up having a chance to just chat with the director. And the director was the one that said to me, I bet people don't give you the credit for being an actor for what you do in your role on television. Because he said, I understand that takes a lot of acting prowess to carry that off, where most people might not think that's acting. And I was like, thank you. It's a balm on my soul a little bit.
Well, you have to show up, and you have to show up with a certain energy every day of the work week, more or less. And people are expecting that. They're expecting you, and life happens, and inside you happens at the same time. So when you started to feel this, how did it end up to bring you to writing a book about it? Because that's a very vulnerable place to be. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I think as we grow, we expand our consciousness, our ideas, our minds. And when I was younger, you know, that sense of insecurity or that imposter syndrome started very early for me. Actually, I remember being a teenager and thinking, wow, everyone thinks I'm smarter than I really am. And why is that? And I didn't want to prove them wrong, but I always felt, even when I was pressured to run to be the student council president at my high school, I thought, nope, no way, because if I do that, then they'll find out that I'm not really that competent, which is classic imposter syndrome. And I took that with me into a career in television that I kind of lucked into, I tripped into almost. I had a really fortuitous path into TV broadcasting, and it was quick. It was almost like this train that I couldn't get off of. And all of a sudden, at the age of 22, I was the co-host of a TV show that broadcast across the three maritime provinces to 350,000 people every weekday. And so I had to project that air of confidence. But at the same time, I look back now and I realize, of course I would have imposter syndrome. I was an imposter to some extent. I had just graduated from university. I was acting the part, and I was surrounded by people who had credibility. I had, you know, colleagues in the newsroom who had worked across the country, who had gone to journalism school, who had won awards, and here I was, a kid straight out of university. I had worked as a summer reporter and all of a sudden had this opportunity to audition to be the co-host. And for some reason, they gave me the job. And 15 years later, I was really happy they had. But in those first few years, I wasn't sure. It was equal parts excitement and terror, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to operate like that. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because before you had arrived, I had worked at the same company in Halifax. That's right. I was in the writing and promotion side of it. And I would see the news shows, and I would be part of some of the shoots and different things. So I knew what that, when you talk about it, I know what it would have been for you to be on the camera and doing that and being so young. It had to be challenging at times. But look where you are now. Look how authentic you are becoming. And I say that because that's been part of your journey through the book. And one of the things you said in the book is, one of your greatest personal accomplishments was self-acceptance. So after the introduction you've given us about this, why do you say self-acceptance? Why was that one of the most important things for you?
Well, I guess the best way for me to answer that is to explain the structure of the book, which is in a way the structure of my life. So the book is presented as an archaeological dig, because when I was young and had this inner critic and was really based in fear, I couldn't understand why I wasn't happy, why I wasn't content. I could have moments of happiness, but I really felt like I wasn't happy with myself. So I didn't feel I could be myself. I think when people say they're talking to someone going out on stage or going on camera, oh, just be yourself. They say it like it's the easiest thing in the world. And I think it's actually the hardest, because we live in a world where we present ourselves to each other wearing a mask. So you see parts of us, but you don't see the parts that we don't want you to see. Whereas living in authenticity requires accepting all those parts of ourselves and then being comfortable allowing people to see, I am a flawed individual. I have this expression that says we are all either flawed or fraud. So if you're not accepting that you have flaws, whatever flaws may be, and I think we're all imperfectly perfect, if you don't have flaws, then you are probably still in that stage where you are wearing a mask, you're showing off instead of showing up. And that's where I mean it's a little fraudulent. The title of my book is simple, but it's simple to me. But I think when people first look at it, they go, huh? And I wanted that to happen. For me, showing off is living your life according to other people's expectations, looking for praise, looking for the good opinion of others. Whereas showing up is, here I am, this is me. And in some ways, what you think of me is none of my business. I'm going to live a life of integrity and authenticity, and I'm going to be compassionate and kind to people. But if they choose, if I'm not their thing, that's okay. And that detaches yourself from the need to please the ever-judging crowd.
And so many of those things that you just said in your explanation there, we've all heard before, and it is easier to say than actually to live it and do it. And we know that. And you had to show up every day and inside feeling this conflict. So it's interesting. And when you decided to write the book, what was the hardest part for you when you began that journey?
Oh, that's an easy answer. Getting out of my own way. And that may be true for most authors, but particularly in the case of writing something that is part memoir, there is a very strong voice within that says, who are you to write a book? And why would people want to read about your life and that sort of thing, which is, that's the voice of the imposter for sure. And the voice of my fear of being judged. And I had to keep going back to my own practice of presence, which is something that I include at the end of the book in the section called Doorways to Presence, to just bring myself back to the present moment and leave all that behind, like leave it in my wake. I say, that's in my wake. I'm moving forward. You can only smooth sailly if you leave your wake behind. Sail smoothly. It's funny, my camera's backwards and now my words are as well.
Went right by me.
Oh, that's so funny.
I love it.
But I guess to further my explanation of my archaeological dig, I had to really dig into what I considered my hole of fear. What was I afraid of? What was holding me back in life? And in that hole, in that dig, I really found things I didn't like about myself and things I wasn't proud of about myself. And so that took me into the dark. And that's where Carl Jung's work of dealing with the shadow comes up. And I really did a lot of work around embracing my dark with my light, and understanding that I'm whole. You know, I'm a whole person. I'm a paradox, just like all of us. None of us is just one thing. And I had a conversation with Elizabeth Gilbert when I interviewed her, that is in the book, in which she gave me this magical gift where, when she talked about paradox, and she was talking about losing her partner to cancer, and how at the time she said, was I the most compassionate, giving, generous caregiver, or was I a total narcissist caught in my own, excuse my language, you can beat that out if you need to. But that's what she said. And her answer was yes to all of that, because she wasn't one or the other. She was all of that. And I think that's the best way of understanding ourselves and each other. And if we can show ourselves the self-compassion to say, yeah, we are made up of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's all beautiful if you can embrace it. And then we can look and turn our lens outward and look at other people that way and be much less judgmental, be much more understanding, compassionate, and helpful, I think, in the world, because then we can feel connected. You know, we live in a world where so many of us are feeling disconnected. And the more dualistic the world is, I love the work of Richard Rohr, who talks a lot about dualism and how so much in our world is dualistic, right, wrong, black, white, you know, gay, straight. It putting us all into slots when really there are no slots, and we're all connected. If you look at the work of people who are on the front lines of the psychedelic world right now, one of the things that they say is that when people are in a truly blissful state, they feel like their cellular bodies, their minds, their souls are connected to every other person on the planet and to the universe. And I think that's the beauty of living in a non-dualistic world. If we could all shake off our concerns, our worries about how we're being judged by others, and really just show up in the world, that's when we can contribute in a meaningful way. Not for gold stars, but really to make a difference in a purpose-driven life. That's what it's about for me.
And I love that you brought up gold stars. And if some people don't understand what that is, that's a way that people can vote for you on the social media. In the world, when you started, you didn't, I know you had gold stars at school, but now they've got that system on Facebook and Instagram, buy a star for a show. However, when you were beginning your career, there was no social media like that. And now we are
hallelujah.
So influenced. Yeah, hallelujah is right. That just adds pressure. So many people today deal with anxiety. They deal with stress. Internally, we see more and more of it. And what's your feeling about social media? Because you mentioned it in the book as well. And I certainly feel it doing what I'm doing. Do they like? Do they not like it? Do they share it? Do they comment? And we're so impacted by this. What would you say about that to people?
Well, I think that really falls into the showing off category. It's that deep concern we have about comparison and judgment. And I really think those are two of the most detrimental forces in the world. I say that in the book. If you really boil it down, comparison and judgment are corrosive. You know, they are constantly making us think about how we are competing against other people, how many stars we're earning, as you say. I have a poem that's in the book, and I think I said this to you before, but one of the most vulnerable things for me about writing this book was including my own little poems, which are, I consider them juvenilia in a way. They are very meaningful to me, and they come from a place of heart and soul. They're not from my head, and I share them, and I'm always amazed when they land with other people. But this one particular poem, it has a line that says, "Gold stars cause scars and forge the need to please. And one of the people who read my book, who I've never met before, reached out to say that she had gotten a star tattoo after reading that poem, because she wanted to remind herself that she wasn't living her life for gold stars. And you can imagine how that went to my heart, because, you know, before I put the book out, even when I sent the book to the printer, I went into a bit of an anxiety spiral, because it's a very... So the day the book actually went to print, I kind of went into an anxiety spiral, because I felt, what am I doing being so vulnerable? And all of a sudden it was out of my control. It was out in the world. And I really thought, what have I done? And that really very quickly dissipated when people started reading the book, because I started to receive messages that were very similar. And now I can say, a year and a half into it, that I've heard from hundreds of people who've said basically the same thing. And that is, you are telling my story. It's like you looked inside my head or my heart and you're telling my story. And what I know now is that my experience is really the human experience. It's the human condition. It's that feeling like everybody else has it all figured out and I don't, but I've got to hide that. And I am really moving past that. I wouldn't say I've moved past it. That's why I call it a practice, to really stay in my grounded self and authentic self. But it's been a great teaching and learning opportunity for me, just writing the book and putting it out, because now I just feel we're all in this together, you know, and that's part of that being connected. And the more we see ourselves as imperfectly perfect, the more we can accept ourselves and each other.
Yes. And Nancy, what you said is how I felt when I was reading the book. I was like, wow, this is great to read these things. And the many, many references that you had in there, you had so many different references that you pulled. And obviously I knew you were reading books, and so many of them that you mentioned, I had read. And so your journey can become part of our journey. Do you think this resonates more with women than men, or do you find it equally? What have you heard? Who have you heard back from?
Well, you know, when I set out, I really expected that my demographic would be women from 35 to 65, maybe. Mm-hmm. And that may be the case. Maybe it's skewed that way, but my experience has been hearing from people in almost every demographic. I've said recently that in 1 week, I heard from an 82-year-old man and a 26-year-old woman who said almost the exact same thing, which is, reading your book has changed the way I look at myself. And that brought tears to my eyes, because that's, you know, that's why I took the risk to put myself out there with vulnerability. And there was a point at which I thought, you know, I've lived such a blessed, fortunate life. Who am I to talk about my insecurities and so on? And then I realized, no, that's exactly why it's valid for me to put this out, because people look at me, some people, you know, who've watched me on TV and have watched me interview huge celebrities, look at me and put me on a pedestal and say, oh, she's so confident. And so in a way, my gift to them was meant to be to say, don't put me on a pedestal. We are just the same. We are all the same. And and I wanted to take off that Wizard of Oz kind of cloak and say, no, I'm just the guy behind the scenes trying to get through life like everybody else. And that's been a great connector for me. I really feel a beautiful sense of connection to the people who have read my book and really gotten something out of it.
And Nancy, as we talk about that, a couple things, where would people find your book in a large bookstore? What section? You know, I thought about that. I said, gee, it's almost a memoir. It's somewhat self-help. Do you know where it's lodged?
Well, I guess it's dependent on the store. I think in a lot of places it would be considered self-help or memoir. And self-help is a funny category because I think it gets a bad rap. I think there are a lot of, as you mentioned, there are a lot of self-help books that I mentioned through the book that people will say, oh, yes, I loved that book too, or, oh, I'm going to go get that book just because of what you said about it. I think that a self-help book is, of course, not all of them are good, but the good ones are like tools in your toolbox. And a hammer will not do the work for you. You can own the hammer, you can buy the hammer, you can keep the hammer, but unless you swing it and actually do the work, it's not going to help you. It's not going to build anything new for you. It's not going to help you expand your world. Mm. And so you have to be prepared to dig in and do the self-help part in order to, you know, feel better and more comfortable in your own self, in your own skin.
And thus the part where I feel I have to go read your book again and take the time with it. Take the time with it because it just felt so good. I want to mention too, your podcast, The Canadian Love Map. And I've been listening to that as well. And it's about love. And I think your gift to the world through your book has been to share and give love and understanding. And here you are doing it with the podcast as well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you. I have to say, this is a role I love. It's a sideline for me kind of, but I enjoy this work so much. We just share uplifting stories and they're love stories of all kinds, not just romance. There are intergenerational family stories. There are people who are engaged in passion projects that are making the world better. It's all about love, as you say, and that comes back to my book because for me, I would say if you had to boil down what my book is about and what my journey has been, it's in the phrase of, I used to think I needed to be loved, but now I just need to be love. I just want to be love and to show up as love in the world. And that's how I'm trying to contribute and trying to amplify the light of others. You know, I feel like now that I am embracing my own inner light, which I had turned down on a dimmer for a lot of years and decades.
I love that. Yes, the dimmer is very easy for us to grab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a lot
turn
of
it
us,
up. Turn it up.
A lot of us, we turn that down in childhood and in teenage years when the world tells you, be quiet, behave, be good, instead of just be. You know, if we tell our children, like, be everything you are and try to embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I said, I really think that we make more confident humans. And for those of us who take decades to get back to that light and go, oh, I have an inner light, I just have to turn up the dimmer switch, it's a really joyful place to get back to it and to feel your own light and then be able to recognize and celebrate the light in others. And, you know, there are a lot of people who say, oh, Nancy, I love the way you're always engaging in this sort of women supporting women, which you're doing right now for me. And yeah, absolutely. That is what I want to do. And I'm happy to celebrate women and celebrate men and anyone who's bringing light to the world. Bring it on.
And very quickly before we wrap, of all the people you've interviewed, and some of them have been people like Madonna, Oprah, Mel Gibson, I think you had Harrison Ford in there, Russell Crowe. Did any one of them leave you with something that stays with you now?
This always makes me a little emotional.
It has to be short.
Yes. Okay. I will make it short. Oprah, I interviewed her in Chicago. I describe it in the book. And it was a life-changing experience in a way, because one thing she said when I was asking her how, if she felt comfortable with her money, because she had come from very, you know, poor means as a child, and if she felt guilty at all about her money. And she came around to saying, well, she said, hell no, Nance, which made me crack up. But then she came around to saying, you know, I do believe that those of us to whom much is given, much is expected. And that was a fundamental piece for her. And that phrase, which ends up being a biblical terminal, or a biblical phrase, I guess, I'm losing my words. I'll say that again. And that phrase, which ends up coming from the Bible, actually lodged itself in my heart and soul and psyche and became the foundation of my belief that we are here to contribute, to give back. Mm-hmm. And we're all given a lot, whether it's even just in terms of our health and our family. And we, you know, if we can find a way to contribute to the world around us, it makes our lives so much better. So many of us want to be rich, but I think what we're really searching for is to be enriched, to live lives that are enriched. And that is, that's what I'm feeling right now. And I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful for you for taking this time today.
Oh, and my pleasure. And what a beautiful way to end the show, Nancy, with those words. And thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And please support my YouTube channel at Catherine Taylor TV. And of course, support Nancy and improve your life from showing up to showing up. Showing up is amazing, Nancy. Thank you for showing up here today.
And thanks, Catherine, so, so much. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Have a great day, everyone.